Pennsylvania. Listen local.
From the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, it's Memorial Day, and we'll look at some of the issues and concerns for veterans in our region. We speak with Staff Sergeant Doug Sandberg of Let's Talk Vets. And there's a 50-mile biking and walking path being built that will span the entire length of Sullivan County, north to south. It's a feat of design and community cooperation, and it's slowly moving closer to becoming a reality. Today, from his Radio Catskill podcast, Close to Home, Leif Johansson tells us about it and the larger regional project that may transform the way we think about accessibility and recreation in our rural area. But first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. A bipartisan congressional delegation is visiting Taiwan today. NPR's Emily Fang reports the trip comes as China steps up its military presence in the region.
The bipartisan delegation is led by the chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Michael McCaul. They met with Taiwan's new president, Lai Ching-te, and his new cabinet. McCaul commented on China's just-finished military drill simulating an attack on Taiwan.
More than anything, I see it as an intimidation tactic to punish democracy, because they don't like democracy.
The congressional visit was pushback against China and China's claims over Taiwan. China has said repeatedly it opposes U.S. congressional visits. And after starting military drills around Taiwan last week, China warned it would meet everything it considered a provocation with, quote, countermeasures. Emily Fang, NPR News, Taipei, Taiwan.
French President Emmanuel Macron is on a 3-day state visit to Germany. NPR's Rob Schmitz reports he'll take part in bilateral meetings as the European Union's two biggest powers ahead of next month's EU parliamentary elections.
Macron's trip to the cities of Berlin, Dresden, and Münster marks the first French presidential state visit to Germany in 24 years. It'll set the tone of the German-French relationship that drives EU policymaking at a time of big challenges for Europe that include Russia's war in Ukraine and the EU's changing posture towards China. Macron told reporters in Berlin that France and Germany face an imperialist desire in Europe, which necessitates boosting the Franco-German relationship. Macron and German Chancellor Olaf Scholz have different leadership styles and have publicly clashed on issues from security to nuclear energy. Rob Schmitz, NPR News, Berlin.
Forecasters are predicting a nasty upcoming Atlanta hurricane season. NPR's Debbie Elliott reports the season begins on Saturday and is expected to be one of the most active on record.
National Weather Service forecasters are issuing their highest prediction ever of storm activity, with up to 25 named tropical storms, including 4 to 7 major hurricanes with winds topping 100 miles an hour. Forecasters say several factors are driving the unprecedented forecast, including near-record warm ocean temperatures, a La Nina weather pattern in the Pacific, and reduced Atlantic trade winds, all of which feed tropical storm formation. Debbie Elliott, NPR News.
Stocks across Asia closed higher today. Wall Street is closed in observance of Memorial Day. Trading on the exchange resumes tomorrow. This is NPR News in Washington. A series of powerful storms has left at least 18 people dead across parts of Texas, Oklahoma, and Arkansas. Ricky Heron says he was forced to take shelter at a gas station in Valley View, Texas, just before a tornado touched down.
At first, it was a strong wind, and then the wind intensified, and then you literally started hearing the building coming apart.
Forecasters say powerful storms are expected to bring high winds, torrential rain, and hail to parts of the northeastern U.S. today. The national average for a price of gas is just about $3.60. That's right in line with last Memorial Day. NPR's Camilla Domonoski reports prices at the gas pump have been declining for weeks.
Price decreases have been very gradual. Overall, gas is pretty steady. And while the U.S. government is liquidating a gasoline stockpile, that isn't likely to shift prices, analysts say. The stockpile was meant for emergencies, but never used, and closing it frees up 1 million barrels worth of gasoline. But Americans burn so much gasoline that that just isn't much by comparison. GasBuddy forecasts that gas prices will hold steady through Labor Day, with a big asterisk for hurricane season. Climate change, fueled largely by fossil fuels, is in turn fueling more intense hurricanes, which can disrupt oil production. Camila Domonoski, NPR News.
I'm Windsor Johnston, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Proven Winners, with Proven Winners Color Choice Shrubs, offering flowering shrubs and evergreens for gardens and landscapes at garden centers nationwide. ProvenWinnersColorChoice.com/NPR. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Memorial Day is supposed to be about mourning the nation's fallen service members, but it's come to anchor the unofficial start of summer and a long weekend of discounts on anything from mattresses to lawnmowers. But for people like Staff Sergeant Doug Sandberg, the day is very personal. Staff Sergeant Sandberg is host and producer of Let's Talk Vets, now heard on Catskills News Talk and CatskillsNewsTalk.com. His show features news and interviews of interest to our veterans and active service communities and highlights the concerns and issues they're facing, from homelessness to health care. He spoke to Jason Dole this Memorial Day.
We're still doing it every Saturday morning at 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock. And, we're still very busy with the veteran community in the Hudson Valley, which is never stops. You know that.
Yeah.
So it's all good. We're also going to be doing the keynote at the Sullivan County Government Center on Memorial Day on Monday at 10 o'clock. And I'll just share the theme that I've come up with you and your listeners. There's been a lot of stuff going on the last couple of years, and our enlistments are down, as you may or may not know. And there's various reasons for that, I believe. But suffice it to say that Memorial Day is about those who gave their all to preserve our freedoms and our liberties in this country. But the question is, in general, after all the marching bands have passed, the last hot dog has been eaten, Uncle Joe's had too many brews, telling war stories with his buddies that get better every year, do we just put Memorial Day back on the shelf and forget it till next year? And I think not. And I think it can be summed up in what Ben Franklin said, First Continental Congress, when he was asked, "Well, doctor, do we have a republic or a monarchy?" And he said, "You have a republic with a caveat, if you can keep it." So the point about it is that the absence of war is not peace. And when the military stands down, the citizens have to stand up and be vigilant and protect that which we have been given.
All right. Thank you, Doug. And that's a preview of some of what you'll be saying as a keynote speaker at the ceremony that's happening at the Government Center. Thank you for sharing that. And, you know, Doug, like you say, it never stops with the needs of veterans in our listening area. Like, there's always ongoing work and ongoing needs. So it's more than we can get into in just a couple of minutes. But I was wondering if you could just give us a couple top of line concerns or issues or even joys from the local veterans community in our region that you'd want folks to know today.
Well, homelessness is always paramount. And fortunately, there aren't that many, but one is too many. And that's a problem. Transportation is always paramount because the older veterans now, of course, are the Vietnam veterans, and they need help a lot of times to get to their appointments. And sometimes they don't drive or they don't have anybody to drive. There is public transportation, but it's still a problem. I think the VA is getting better with their services and their outreach. And also the organizations, the traditional organizations, the VFW and the American Legion and such, and other volunteer organizations like fire departments and the ambulance squads and such, are their membership is depleting. And I think you can prove this by checking any of those organizations, the roles of membership, active membership, and their ages, and you will find out that the age of those volunteers is increasing. Folks just are too busy these days. I think they don't have enough free time. Our Iraq and Afghanistan vets have been, well, I'm trying to put this politely, they've gotten a raw deal, and they are just trying to stay behind between society's guideposts and live their life quietly, and they really don't want to participate in anything that has to do with government. So those are the challenges as I see them. Some of them have always been there. Suicide is still a tremendous challenge for us, but also the hundreds of thousands of veterans and service members that have perished or gotten ill as a result of their service, but are not counted on any roll because their deaths were not combat related. They were, could have been many, many years after the fact as a result of Agent Orange or the burn pits in Afghanistan and Iraq, the potable water tainted at many bases. Now it's coming out. And, things like defective CPAP machines that were issued by the VA that the vets had to keep using even though they were defective, and the breakdown of the insulating foam could cause illness, but the manufacturer couldn't keep up with demand, so they were told, well, they're defective and it might cause cancer, but you got to keep using it. So there's a whole list of things like that that are there, and like I said, those hundreds of thousands of names that are, I'm calling them the invisibles.
Memorial Day is the day to remember those who have served that we have lost, and Veterans Day and every day is to keep in mind those who have served who are still with us. You're identifying another group that isn't really being counted in the former group. It also sounds like you're taking Memorial Day as an opportunity to reinforce the notion of service, too, as you count different organizations that aren't seeing a lot of service enrollment numbers down. It sounds like you're taking this opportunity to honor those who've served that we've lost by thinking about how people can still serve today.
Well, that's correct, because if we citizens don't stand up and remain vigilant and do the things that we need to do by paying attention to what's going on, by making our voices heard, by electing people that are truly interested in public service and not just in power and re-elections and becoming mini monarchs. If we don't do that, then those things which we have been given in the beginning by our founders, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, will slip away. And that would invalidate the sacrifice of those we remember on Memorial Day.
Doug, before we go, do you want to just remind people real quick where they can hear Let's Talk Vets?
Yes, thank you. Every Saturday morning, 8 o'clock, it's on Catskills News Talk, which is 92.5 and 94.9 FM, 1240 AM, streaming at Radio Bold. Under Catskills News Talk, just hit the play button at that time, and you will find them shortly after the broadcast on Spotify under Let's Talk Vets.
All right. Well, Doug, I thank you again for your continuing service to the community, and thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you, Jason. It's been a pleasure, and I wish you all the best and looking forward to a very respectful and introspective Memorial Day.
Staff Sergeant Doug Sandberg of Let's Talk Vets, speaking to Jason Dole. And you can hear Staff Sergeant Sandberg's keynote address at the ceremonies today at the Sullivan County Government Center marking Memorial Day on the local edition tonight at 6. We'll take a break, and when we come back, the 50-mile-long biking and walking path being built that will span the entire length of Sullivan County. This is Radio Chatskill.
Ever been frustrated at the DMV or on hold with the cable company? You've likely run into what psychologist Bob Sutton calls friction.
Friction fixing is sort of like mowing the lawn. There's no one and done with this sort of stuff.
Friction and how to fix it. This week on Hidden Brain from NPR. Today at 1 on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. There's a 50-mile biking and walking path being built that will span the entire length of Sullivan County, north to south. It's a feat of design and community cooperation, and it's slowly moving closer to becoming a reality. But that's just part of a larger regional project that may transform the way we think about accessibility and recreation in our rural area. On his Radio Catskill podcast, Close to Home, Leif Johansson speaks to Heather Brown, Sullivan County's Commissioner of Planning, Community Development, and Environmental Management, Heather Jaxey, Sullivan County's Chief Planner, Annie Berglund, Design and Capital Projects Manager at the Open Space Institute, and Tatum Justice, Northeast Land Project Manager at the Open Space Institute. This episode is an update of his piece in early 2021 on the O&W Rail Trail Project.
3 years ago, we did an episode on rail trails, and we specifically talked about the ongoing work on Sullivan County's O&W Rail Trail Project, which has been a long-term effort to build and link recreational rail trails to eventually span 50 miles across the entirety of Sullivan County from the northernmost tip in the town of Rockland to the southernmost tip in the town of Mamikating. And at the time of that episode, when I spoke to the then head of the Sullivan County Division of Planning, Community Development, and Environmental Management, we were right in the middle of COVID, and progress on this project hadn't stalled, but it was impacted by lockdown, price spikes, and material shortages. So fast forward 3 years, I figure it's time for an update. So I recently sat down with two leaders working at the county level to bring the O&W Rail Trail project off the pages and into our communities. And we started this conversation by talking about some of the broader efforts from the Division of Planning to make our region more accessible, which I wanted to keep in this episode as well, because there are some exciting projects afoot from this office. Let's take a listen.
So I'm Heather Brown. I'm the Commissioner of the Sullivan County Division of Planning, Community Development, and Environmental Management.
And I'm Heather Jaxey. I'm Chief Planner in the Planning Office.
Can one of you start out by just giving us an overview of what the Planning Office is and the types of projects that you would work on there?
Basically, the office deals with a lot of different things that affect the way we live in the county. Starting with land use and how our communities develop. We try and help our communities when they get applications for projects. There's some state laws that require them to submit projects to us to review, but we also deal with economic development, recreation, and all sorts of things. You know, when you sort of think about what makes a community a great community, hopefully it's the planners that have been involved in helping it make it that way.
Yeah, and just kind of to piggyback off of that, I think that this year in 2024, we have some really exciting projects that are coming up, some that are coming to a close and some that are coming to a beginning. So we're just finishing up the final touches on our draft Sullivan County Resiliency Plan, which was presented at the Executive Committee of the Legislature last Thursday. That looks into pretty much every aspect of the Sullivan County community from a social standpoint, from an economic standpoint, and from an environmental standpoint to identify areas where the county can improve its resiliency, its ability to bounce back after extreme events, whether it's weather events, man-made events, global pandemics, not that we've had any of those lately. So we've got that. We've got a couple of really exciting plans, I think, that we're initiating this year. We have a bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure master plan that we'll be initiating. They'll be looking at our infrastructure in and around our population centers, our villages and hamlets. We've got our hazard mitigation plan. We'll begin hopefully initiation this year for an update of the multi-jurisdictional hazard mitigation plan. We will be initiating the update of the Sullivan County Agriculture and Farmland Protection Plan. And we will also be doing a inventory of the potable water and wastewater inventory in Sullivan County to get a better handle on where our infrastructure is, how old is it, what is the capacity, and to identify investments that need to be made and where it's smart to target for economic development as well as, housing development. And speaking of housing, that's another really big issue that the county will be tackling from a multifaceted kind of perspective this year. So housing is kind of the issue, not just in Sullivan County, but in New York State. So housing is going to be very prominent in trying to develop programs to alleviate some of the pressure on our, rent burdened or, housing burdened population in the county. So we've got a lot on our plates, I would say, this year, it's fair to say.
Something else that you just brought up was the bicycle and pedestrian master plan, which seems very tied into this broader subject that Rail Trails kind of falls under the umbrella of how we can get around our communities without a car, which would have seemed impossible not that long ago, given that we are a more rural community. But it seems more and more possible these days, as it seems like there are more conversations about this and with progress on the rail trails. But I know I've lived in communities in Sullivan County in the past where the main street, I'm thinking a place like Youngsville, for example. I used to live in Youngsville. There's no real sidewalk infrastructure along Route 52 through Youngsville. But a lot of community members there would say, we don't really want sidewalks here. We don't want people walking around our main drag here because we're worried about consequences from that, young people causing trouble and whatnot. How do you kind of circle that square of, we want places to be accessible. We want people to be able to get around without having to get into their cars just to go a very short distance while also working collaboratively with communities?
I think we have to start by acknowledging that there are areas of Sullivan County that have a very large proportion of people who actually don't own cars. It's surprising for such a rural area. So we have to acknowledge that not only, it's nice to walk, but some people need to walk and bike.
Yeah. And I think that there's a very large portion of this planning process that is about community engagement. So I think that comes really, right at the front end of this plan and all the way through to be sure that we are engaging, community leaders, whether they be, town and village municipal officials, or maybe there are police officers who have concerns about, particular sections of roadways where they see potential for pedestrian conflicts with vehicles. And then you have, potential for some not so good outcomes there, but also to engage people who live in these communities and to assess what are your needs, where do you need to go? What are your concerns? If you don't want a sidewalk, sidewalks are not the only way to move people through a community. Maybe you don't have a formal sidewalk with a curb. Maybe there's more of a walking path, along the side of a road and not necessarily directly on the shoulder. Or maybe there's a town park that, you can make more attractive to, cross through the town park, into town centers. I don't think that we have to limit ourselves just to the concept of what everyone thinks is like, the sidewalk is where you walk and that's where we go to. I think that there's many more opportunities to connect people within their communities and to the critical services, their jobs, their grocery stores. I think there's ways to keep everyone happy in this situation.
I know when we did the last episode on rail trails, there was some discussion about the economic benefits of having
a rail trail that are sort of indirect from having the rail trail, that people, when they are using a rail trail, will spend money in the surrounding communities that the rail trail is on. Does your office work with data on what you might expect for economic benefits from an increase in walkability or bikeability for different communities, whether it's for the sections of rail trails that you're working on, or for even adding something like sidewalks to a community or something else to make a community less car dependent?
I can speak a little to the rail trail. There's volumes of data out there that show the correlation between spending and the users. When you have a rail trail that attracts the people from a regional perspective, you know, for a day trip versus, you know, a greater geographical area for a multi-day trip, you know, the number of that spending goes up a lot. But there's also other fiscal benefits, especially in a county like ours, where there's a high incidence of unhealthy behaviors. Having a rail trail actually improves your health. Like, it's an easy way to get outdoors for all different levels. You know, you can go for longer if you're healthier. You can go for shorter if you're just working up to that healthy state. And there's also relationship between proximity to a rail trail and the value of your house. So it adds a lot of stability, you know, for the economics and the health of a community.
So that said, when we did this episode a few years ago, there were about 25 miles of completed rail trail sections, not contiguous, but in different sections around the county. I'm curious how it's looking now, what sections have been either completed or started since maybe COVID hit, and what we might expect in the next year or so, or maybe in 2024.
COVID did throw us off.
I can only imagine.
and you know, and the trails became very popular during COVID. People wanted to get out of the house. So I think that it got a new focus. And we did add a little trail. The town of Fallsburg was successful in nearly completing their, we're calling it the Tunnel Bypass Trail. It's sort of an extension from South Fallsburg towards Woodridge. And as you probably learned last time you interviewed us, the bridge over the Never Sink is a big bite that we've taken and we're working on still. And between the tunnel bypass and the bridge over the Never Sink, we'll have a 14-mile section of trail, which is really enough to draw from the region. I don't know if you've ever been to the Heritage Trail over in Orange County, but it's very popular. It's got a great ice cream shop, which, you know, is really popular with the users. So we'll have something that is equal.
And that Never Sink Crossing project is coming much closer to fruition. It's a really big lift when it comes to the design and the engineering and the permitting that is required for that. And certainly, you know, with the state and federal agencies that we need to work with, working with the municipalities, in this case, Fallsburg, you know, it's taken some time to get there, and it's taken some time to get the funding in place. But it's going to be pretty exciting, because I believe that we will be seeing that project come to fruition in the next, I would say, 12 to 18 months. We should be seeing the project begin to get constructed if everything stays on track as it is right now, which is really exciting. And I mean, Heather Jaxey has really just put her all into this project. She deserves a lot of credit for coordinating this and keeping it together. I'm pretty new to the scene with this, so she's definitely appreciated for all of her efforts. I think that you're also going to start to see construction start on some other sections of the trail, certainly in the section between Parksville and Livingston Manor. So as you go up from Liberty into the town of Rockland, there is design and engineering efforts underway to get plans in place once again, so we can start getting that connection completed. Heather was also very successful in working with the town and village of Liberty this year. So the town of Liberty actually was able to get some considerable amount of grant funding, I believe about $750,000, to assist with the construction of that trail piece in Parksville. So there are things happening. Sometimes you don't always see the things that are happening, but that's not to say there's not a huge amount of work that's going on in the background to get us to the point where we can get, you know, shovels in the ground or whatever we do on trails, maybe clippers on trees, tree branches, and you know, drainage and everything else that needs to go into this. Sullivan County doesn't lack for water and rivers and streams, certainly. So when you're trying to construct a trail that spans 50 miles across the entire, you know, south and then the east and then the north part of the county, you know, you need to figure out how to get across those streams in a way that is safe and a way that is sensitive to the environment. So we're making sure that we're dotting all of our I's and crossing all of our T's, but there's a lot of resources being put into this initiative right now, and I think that the people of Sullivan County are going to see the fruits of this labor very shortly.
I want to ask Heather Jaxie about this process of making this bridge over the Neversink happen, because it sounds like this has been something you've been involved in for quite a long time. And I know that this bridge has been in the plans for years at this point. For folks who listen to this and say, you know, I wanted to see this bridge years ago, why can't we just get things done quickly here? Like, things in government always take so long. Can you just give a picture of kind of what has to go into a project like this to make it actually come to fruition?
Sure. So we started off with a feasibility study that had just a really schematic idea for a crossing there. And then you have to take it to the next phase, which is getting a better understanding of what sort of earth there is underneath it, you know, what sort of options we have for construction. You know, do we want a boardwalk or do we want an earthen berm? And there are a gazillion choices that have to be made. And then when you sort of get to the point where you know kind of what you want it to look like, and you know a little bit about the earth, and you have to get surveys, and you have to find funding, and you have to figure out whether or not there are dwarf wedge mussels in the river. And you have to figure out whether or not there are bats in the trees. And these are all important things. You know, we don't want to go stomping all over this. So you want to do it right. And I think part of the slowness of our process was that Sullivan County is so beautiful and so, you know, it's got all these amazing natural resources, and you really don't want to harm them. So that takes a while. And then COVID.
Do either of you have a sense of, for like that bridge to cross over the Neversink, what the total projected dollar figure is from starting of planning that to finishing of constructing that?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely have a number that we're working with right now. And I think, you know, we're I don't think it's better trying to dodge a question right now, but you know, some of the costs associated with construction have been pretty volatile in recent years. Yep. So we can have an estimate for today, but I think that there's a hesitation to put an exact dollar amount on it at this stage, because we know how wildly we have seen cost estimates change, particularly in the post-COVID era. It seems that it's been smoothing out a bit in the last year, maybe. It's not quite as bad as it was, say, in 2021 and 22, but you know, it's not in the thousands. It's definitely, you know, in the millions of dollars of range for this. But what's really amazing about it is that even with, you know, a, you know, seven figure number attached to it, not a whole lot of that is local dollars. We had a line item that was put in by our federal representative, which brought, you know, $1.1 million to this project that is coming from, you know, federal funds. There are several sources of state funding and I think private foundation funding that have been committed to this project. So there's a relatively small percentage that is actually local dollars from the municipalities.
So I guess the million-dollar question here is when am I going to be able to hop on my bike and ride from Livingston Manor down to the Orange County border? Is there currently a projected time when one might be able to do this?
I don't know if you can actually predict that, because it's all based on, you know, funding opportunities and, you know, how quickly we can move through what we've got on our plate right now. But I can tell you that I do have a personal plan to finish it before I retire. So how's that?
Are you planning on retiring in the next 10 years, 20 years?
We got 7 years.
Okay. I am always so excited to hear from folks who are getting creative and making our communities more livable. Because projects like the ONW Rail Trail stand to benefit us on so many levels. It's good for our health, it's good for our economy, it's potentially good for our environment if it's spurring more folks to get around on foot and on their bikes instead of in their cars, and it's going to give future generations of community members here a new appreciation for getting outside and exploring our natural world. And one of the most exciting things about this project is that it doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's part of a larger initiative to connect a big piece of the Hudson Valley via rail trails. And when all these trails are complete and connected together, we'll be able to hop on our bikes and ride from Port Jervis straight up to Kingston, all along the footprint of abandoned railways. It's called the Growing Greenways Plan, and it was unveiled in 2023 by the Open Space Institute, which manages hundreds of land conservation projects along the entire eastern seaboard. So to expand on this update that we just heard from the Sullivan County side of things, I hopped on a call with two folks from the Open Space Institute to get a better understanding of what this organization is and how it's working to make the Growing Greenways Plan a reality.
We're listening to Radio Catskill podcast Close to Home from host and producer Leif Johansson about the rail trails in Sullivan County. We'll take a break and back with more. This is Radio Catskill.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, a private equity heavyweight is offering what he says is a valuable reform.
This is something I really believe in.
But not everyone is buying what he's selling.
You have to look at private equity overall and say, is this a force for good for workers? And it's massively not.
That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Tuesday at 1 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
Let's return to Leif Johansson and his podcast, Close to Home, discussing the 50-mile biking and walking path being built and the larger regional project that might transform the way we think about recreation in our rural area.
My name is Annie Berglin. I'm a project manager with the parks team at OSI. So in this role, I manage planning, design, and construction of capital projects such as greenway trails, carriage roads, and other parks projects. My background is that I'm a landscape architect and an arborist, and just generally love getting outdoors any chance I can. So it's kind of a dream to be able to work on trail projects.
And to follow Annie, my name is Tatum Justice. I've been with the Open Space Institute for the last 5 years, but a total of 10 years in the land trust community doing work, conservation work. And I act as the Northeast Land Project Manager for our Northeast Land team here in New York State. To provide a short summary, the Open Space Institute, or rather OSI, as you might hear us refer to on this call, is really a national leader in land conservation efforts and efforts to make parks and other protected land more welcoming for all. And really, since our start in 1974, now celebrating 50 years of land conservation, woohoo, OSI has partnered in the protection of more than 2.5 million at-risk and environmentally sensitive acres on the East Coast. So we really range from Florida all the way up to Canada on the coastline here. And we'd like to say that our land protection promotes both clean air, clean water, improves access to recreation, provides wildlife habitat, and strengthens communities, as well as combating climate change. But in truth, I would say OSI does so much more than that, and more than what generally a conventional land trust would exercise as well. We have several programs that provide a multitude of benefits, such as fiscal sponsor programs for community-driven projects and re-grant programs to support other land trusts in the land trust community, as well as land protection. And we're able to bring a variety of expertise and the capacity needed to complete complicated land protection projects across all of those realms.
And for anyone who's not familiar, can you also just give us a sense of what exactly a land trust is and how that would work?
Sure. So oftentimes land trusts are a nonprofit that falls, whether accredited or not, falls within a given landscape or a given state. Often the region and I guess the area that it touches is often dependent on the mission of the land trust. Ours, for example, covers the entire East Coast, whereas there may be more local land trusts, such as the Beaverkill Valley Land Trust, Wallkill Valley Land Trust. These land trusts really speak to the voice and mission of that community.
So to get into this topic of the Growing Greenways Plan, maybe, Annie, you can give an overview of how that kind of came about and what that looks like as of now, since it was introduced last year.
So the Growing Greenways Vision Plan, which was released last year, represents a three-county vision to develop a regional multi-use trail network throughout Ulster, Sullivan, and Orange counties. And it's a trail network that would span over 250 miles, connecting dozens of communities, become an interconnected system of trails for non-motorized transportation and recreation, you know, such as hiking, biking, cross-country skiing, horseback riding, you know, snowshoeing, you name it. And it's really a vision that sort of lays out a blueprint for us to develop trail projects and interconnect everything. This vision plan really maps out a way for OSI to identify discrete projects that we can build out the plan. If we set this master vision, we can see where the corridors are and identify how we can move forward in making this vision possible. And so much of that actually starts with the land component. So that's where Tatum comes in. I'm on the construction side and the design development side, but we can't do anything without the land component. So I'd like to turn it over to Tatum to talk a little bit more about that.
Sure, I'd be happy to. You know, we really do target into what is the best connection between these segments of trail that have already been built out in each of these in these counties and towns. And, you know, our most recent acquisitions I can really point to have been in Ulster and Orange County, one being the Springland O&W Trail, which was a recent OSI acquisition that connects from about 2.4 miles section of trail between Springland and the former Neville Resort in Ulster County. While it's not currently under open, or it is under our stewardship, and there are plans to convey this for public access in the future. But this really is a critical piece of property that really exhibits the mission of this Growing Greenways Plan and helping to reconnect a multiple use trail along the 57 mile O&W railroad route that will run from Port Jervis to Kingston, and as part of our O&W section within the Growing Greenways Plan. In addition, this section of trail is also adjacent to a New York State Department of Environmental Conservation land, the Shwongo Ridge State Forest, which was also acquired by OSI in the 90s. So we're really truly building on decades of land conservation projects here and trying to make this this connectivity a reality to the communities surrounding it.
So OSI is picking up land in different areas here and related to Growing Greenways in order to eventually have that developed into, you know, recreational trail systems. Can you kind of paint a verbal picture of what this 250-mile plan would eventually look like if and when it is completed?
You know, it's really an incredible network. And when you look at a map, you can see sort of a lot of spokes are coming off of hubs, and the hubs being the cities or the towns or the hamlets, and then the trail corridors that connect. Because, you know, going back in time, we're using the original rail corridors that from which these communities were built up around. So there's a history there of railroads, and those were really intentional in where they went and connecting cities and towns. We're also lucky because they're very level and flat, so they make really wonderful trails. You know, I'd say Kingston is a really major hub in the network of the vision at the northern end of the whole plan. And then I'll focus specifically on the O&W corridor, which Tatum mentioned. We last year started a comprehensive feasibility study from Kingston to Port Jervis, which is 57 miles. And the overall intention is to restore this fragmented corridor. This effort includes detailed analysis of the existing conditions of the corridor, routing options to look where the corridor has been fragmented, and engineering and cost analysis. So we've finished the on-the-ground site conditions, and we're about to go into looking at routing options. Now, in tandem with that project, we are about to embark on a pretty significant community engagement program to engage all the communities along the whole O&W corridor. And that will begin in the spring with a series of open houses, surveys, targeted stakeholder outreach, because we really want to connect with all the communities along the whole O&W corridor.
So in terms of getting all of the access to the land and resources in order to make this happen, where is this project at right now?
I'll take it from the land acquisition perspective. There's several new land acquisitions that we can point to. One I mentioned earlier, the Spring Glen Trail, and then also the Scudamunk Rail Trail in Orange County. Truly, it's a step-by-step action within these when it comes to land acquisition. We need to be able to strike while the iron is hot. And OSI is lucky enough that we're able to play that role and assist the communities when a new land acquisition opportunity does come up. Oftentimes, if we're working at state or federal level, it can be a much slower process. Whereas when we're working with the local communities here at the county and town levels, we're able to leverage the local government support and funding and move at a much quicker pace to benefit the communities directly versus, say, a slower moving state or federal process to secure conservation land. And so this helps us to continue to build partnerships with the communities along the way as well, which opens up more opportunities. So, you know, as to where we're at, I think there's different takes you can share on that, where we call each acquisition of new trail connection a success. But, you know, there's a long way to go, I think, in the interconnectivity of the eight sections of trails here in the Growing Greenways plan.
We do work closely with the towns and the municipalities. So a lot of the sections that we've already restored to build out the Growing Greenways vision are in town ownership. So we worked with the town of Warsing and the town of Rochester most recently on the O&W corridor on sections that were owned by the town. So working really closely, and also there's a buy-in for them. You know, this is a long-term benefit for them. And we were able to leverage some support, some in-kind support from the towns. They helped, you know, sort of clearing trees, trucking in some materials as we were building the project. We're working with our willing partners and trying to have good relations with the local communities to build out the projects. Ultimately, we see it as a benefit for everyone.
So just given that our radio station is based out of Sullivan County, I'm curious what that relationship looks like between, say, OSI and the county planning office in Sullivan. And I know that office has been working on this, the rail trail project in Sullivan County for many years now. Have OSI and that office been in contact from day one?
So really, OSI has had a presence in Sullivan County for decades now. Historically, we actually helped to facilitate the creation of the Mamikating and Hurleyville Trail. So those are two ready-to-go open trails that have been functioning for the communities here for years now. But most recently, we have been working with the Sullivan County Planning Department and also the county manager to really key in on sections of trail based on a Sullivan feasibility study that they conducted, I believe, back in 2020. So along with this work, I would say most recently since 2020, we've been helping to pursue further acquisitions based on this feasibility study to make these connections for with the county and with municipal support. And also we're working very closely with Sullivan County O&W Trail Alliance, which is also led by Sullivan County Planning Department, which has developed a group of businesses, townships, conservation nonprofits, recreation groups, that all have aligned with furthering the O&W recreational trail mission throughout the county and bringing back that larger community support initiative to create a sustainable vision around the O&W rail trail and to benefit the communities both recreationally, economically, for health and well-being, you name it. I think the benefits are abound when it comes to making these connections and reconnecting these trails.
When you have this new piece of land that you want to develop rail trail on or some other kind of recreational pathway on, how do you actually go about making that happen and going through that design process? You know, it works out nicely to have old railway paths here because it's already graded appropriately. But I imagine that there's a lot of development that, and thought that needs to go into this to make this usable.
Yeah, it works out nicely, but it's not always perfect because as we discovered on the O&W this year, existing conditions are actually extremely wet. So we ended up having to sort of overcompensate with a lot of sub-base to build up the rail bed so that it just we wouldn't have those wet, muddy conditions. I'm very lucky to be working on a team and that we hire consultants. So we hire consultants to do the design work. So I manage that process. We go out, we assess the existing conditions and develop a set of plans and work from that. So often drainage is number one, focus area, because that can really make or break a project pretty easily. We have a lot of bridge crossings. So last year we rebuilt not just in the Ferrin Greenways, but overall I was involved with 6 bridges that were built. So we're building a lot of bridges, metaphorically and physically. And we're really fortunate to work with some wonderful contractors who know the landscape and, call me when there are issues that are in site conditions when they're constructing and say, hey, we've got a problem here or we need more culverts or we need some more material. And, we've been able to bring in support from town highway departments as well. So it's really a big team effort, but it's a lot of fun.
What in the Growing Greenways projects are you both looking forward to in the next couple of years?
So working so closely with Sullivan County Planning and such a passionate team and also the Trail Alliance, there really is a drive, I think, in Sullivan County to make connections in these trails. And we're really looking to make a solid connection, ideally as part of the ultimate goal as well of the OSI Growing Greenways plan, from the existing trails in Mountaindale to Mamikating, where you'll find just north of that Summitville, the D&H Canal Linear Park. So really the concept and planning and drive by the community to make this a recreational connection that will ultimately also connect to the larger O&W as it runs from Port Jervis to Kingston. There's a lot of potential in this area, I think, and a lot of community drive to see it completed.
And are there any particular projects that you and your team are working on right now that you're excited to come to fruition this year or in the next few years?
I guess I can speak more generally and specific, but I, as a cyclist myself, I ride on roads, I ride on trails. When I see people walking on roadsides or walking or cycling on the roads, I just think about how happy I'm going to be when they can ride on a protected corridor that is comfortable and safe and also accessible to a wide range of people. In when we completed the O&W section in Kerhonkson, I went back for a site visit and I saw three different families pushing baby strollers on the trail. I mean, the condition of the trail before that, you could never do that. So that was really incredible. And to me, it just showed the benefits right there. I'm excited to bring the trails bring them through the communities and make it a reality and get people out there.
I can't wait for the day when I can bike across three counties in our region on a single interconnected trail. And I have a feeling that this is going to be a serious boon for regional tourism and businesses up and down the Greenway. And even though these projects take a long time and require an immense amount of coordination between so many stakeholders, it's happening. And it feels strangely emblematic of how we get big infrastructure projects done in the United States more broadly. They're slow, expensive, and often a lot more expensive than we think they're going to be at the outset. And they are often logistical and clerical nightmares at every turn. But every once in a while, when we do get big things done, they can be breathtaking. And I have a feeling that these rail trail projects are going to bring our communities together in new and exciting ways. Next year at this time, we might see the beginning of construction of a new bridge over the Neversink. And the 14 miles of rail trails that helps connect is already going to be so fun to check out. And as those updates roll in, we will be talking about it right here on Close to Home. Thank you so much to Annie Bergelin and Tatum Justice from the Open Space Institute, and Heather Brown and Heather Jaxey from the Sullivan County Division of Planning, Community Development, and Environmental Management for joining me on today's episode. And as always, thank you for listening. I'm Leif Johansson, and this is Close to Home, a podcast from WJFF Radio Catskill. Have a great week.
That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. Be sure to check out all of our local programming at our website, wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, we travel to Mexico, where the country is going to elect its first female president in history before the U.S. But is the situation changing for women on the streets? We cover the International Women's Day March to find out.
For me, it's hopeful that a lot of young women are taking a part in politics.
That's this week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
This is Kusar Grace, KG, right here in the place to be, WJFF Radio Catskills Music Emporium, Tuesday night, 7 to 9. 2 hours of great music, jazz, funk, blues. I got mellow grooves to help you unwind, exciting rhythms to help you cut loose. Join me Tuesday night for the Music Emporium, 7 to 9, right here on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Artist Cottage Bed and Breakfast, a newly renovated farmhouse that sleeps four with full gourmet cooked breakfast provided daily, located near the top of Hauk Mountain Road in the town of Walton. More information at greatwesterncatskills.com.
This is Radio Catskill. WJFF Jeffersonville. Listen local.